Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Monday, January 21st, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Brian Chaffin. Hi, Brian.
Happy MLK Day.
And also with you, I don't know how that works. Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew, and happy MLK Day.
Yeah, happy MLK Day.
And I think the first thing we want to talk about a little bit is we want to talk about globalization. Sounds like that might be not quite the right word for it. But Brian, this was something we talked about a little earlier today.
Yeah, you want me to make the pitch?
I do.
So Andrew found the story. Andrew, are you going to write this up?
Yeah.
Still? Excellent. So the root of the story, I think 9 to 5 Mac covered it first, is that Japan is thinking about requiring tech companies, international tech companies, read American tech companies, to station agents in the country so that the companies can be held to the same privacy and disclosure laws that Japanese companies are being held to.
Okay.
And this, it's certainly interesting. And the thought that came out of my head was that, you know, what we're seeing in many different ways, from everything from taxation to encryption to privacy and the lack thereof, to government surveillance and the lack thereof, to user privacy, like in all these different ways, we're seeing a essentially the most globalized world that this world has ever seen. And assuming that the dinosaurs didn't actually have
Facebook,
some sort of civilization that we haven't figured out yet. And it's struggling with that reality. And like we're seeing more local governments, and by local governments, I mean local national governments, trying to assert their own sovereignty and control over these essentially companies. And it's an interesting struggle, and some of those struggles are awful, from, you know, to wit, authoritarian regimes, and like what the heck is going wrong in Australia that Australia's tried to ban crypto? Like what the heck is wrong anyway? So, you know, Australia and Britain and or the UK, I should say, and then, you know, authoritarian regimes like China and Russia, and even some small fries wanting to completely ban encryption. That's all to the negative side. And then on the positive side, we have the EU holding American tech companies to a hotter regulatory fire than the U.S. government holds them to. And now we have the same thing is true with in the world of privacy. And now it seems like this thing to do with Japan is, in particular, to better control how tech companies are being regulated in terms of user privacy and user information and how it's disclosed and who can use it and that sort of thing. And it's very interesting. It's like we're getting sort of this localized pushback against the ultimate expression of globalization, even while globalization itself continues to you know, rage, rampage, or, you know, beautify the world, depending on you know which perspective you.
Depending on the day.
Well, depending on the person who's looking at it, because I don't know. It's interesting. I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know what to say about it. I don't know what to, you know, I don't know where it's going. I don't know what's going to happen. This thing in Japan is just one expression of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing that's interesting is that we've had interconnectivity, you know, through the internet and the web and, you know, social media in some fashion, you know, before we even really called it social media, for a really long time, relatively, you know. And so it seems like this is a thing that more people should have seen coming, because it wasn't really hard to extrapolate that once everybody had connectivity, that everybody would have connectivity.
Balderdash. You know, so it's funny. I know we're going to talk about this later, but Valley of the Boom makes this very point where, you know, we look back at this stuff and we say it should be obvious, but like how many things that are happening right now, can you say what's going to happen with them? Like, where is Bitcoin going? Where is cryptocurrency going? Where is blockchain going?
Well,
so don't.
No, that's not.
I don't think anything about the rise of where we were today was obvious to almost anyone.
Well, not necessarily in that respect, but that more people would end up with some sort of connectivity, and that more people would be able to communicate with more people than ever before, and that it would be very easy to talk to someone on the other side of the world, in, you know, which was unthinkable, you know, prior to that, at least in any sort of effective or accurate sort of fashion, aside from like the longest distance of phone calls, you know, back when long distance calls cost money. So that's what I mean, is that as people were able to get this communication going, you know, somebody in California can talk to somebody in the other end of California. Somebody should have seen that with that same capability, you could talk to somebody in Oregon, you could talk to somebody in New York, you could talk to somebody in Japan or London, yeah, or whatever. And that scale going up should have been a little bit more obvious, and people maybe should have seen some of that coming. And the people who did see that were sort of written off as lunatics.
Yeah, that's what I'm calling balderdash, because I mean, the premise that people would be able to communicate was baked into the internet, to be sure. Mm-hmm. And it was baked into the early growth of the internet, to be sure. Exactly how that would manifest, and it both in for good and for ill, that's the part that I don't think anyone necessarily should have seen, because there are, you know, literally billions of factors.
Oh, sure.
Going into where we are right now.
Right. I'm not saying anybody needed.
We're making decisions, and you know, various companies are making decisions, and that's the part that I don't really think that anyone could have seen.
No, I'm not saying anybody should have seen Facebook coming or anything like that. That's not what I'm advocating. But that maybe there should have been more thought given to what happens when everybody has this kind of access. And I know we're not there yet, but we're getting close. And it seems like there should be. That maybe there should have been more conversations about that. That's all. So that was the thing that I was trying to say. Yep. So
still calling balderdash. like who, like no one saw the problem of social media and social networking being put to work by authoritarian regimes, being put together by, being used and manipulated by forces who would deliberately and artificially spread false information in order to achieve certain ends. I mean, like, no one saw that particular problem.
Right.
And I don't think it was foreseeable.
Okay. I agree with you there. I think it's the kind
of apology.
Well, I think that this is the same sort of thing that we've been seeing with tech companies and, you know, all kinds of things where nobody stopped and thought about, you know, what happens if a bad guy gets a hold of this, or if somebody with less than savory intentions were to something, you know, okay, with this particular technology.
I then will offer you my apology, because I agree that there should have been more conversations about that.
Yeah,
there
that's,
should have been
that's all the, I mean. Not that they could have prevented
side,
it.
On the privacy side,
yeah,
those weren't privacy and security were in no. I mean, like look at everything that Microsoft did, and again, I'm thinking of Valley of the Boom, but look at everything that Microsoft did in the 90s, where security was a distant concern. Like, you know, no one gave a crap about security in the world of Microsoft for years and years and years until it became a competitive disadvantage. Until their abdication of responsibility and attention on this particular issue became a competitive issue.
Right.
And Microsoft should have been having conversations about security back then. Facebook should have been having actually, the sad thing is, though, that Facebook probably did have conversations about this stuff. And then yeah. they elected
and
to
went,
do
oh, whatever. Yeah.
They're, you know, elected to do the wrong thing anyway.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. Also unsurprising, probably to most people, I think, is going to be that we have a sponsor today. And our sponsor today is ExpressVPN. Particularly on this show, we cover a lot of online security breaches, right, Andrew?
Yes.
Poor Andrew, as I put him on the spot. Yeah, we talk about security a lot here. And so, you know, it's hard to worry about where your data is going to be. And if you make a purchase online or if you log into your email, you know, you could be putting your information at risk. You're getting tracked by all different kinds of sites and marketing companies. And whether you know it or not, there can be a whole lot of information out there about you that you didn't necessarily want to make available. So you can fix that by using ExpressVPN. It has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background, and turning them on is a single click. You can secure and anonymize internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. You can protect yourself with ExpressVPN for less than $7 a month. It's the number one rated VPN service by TechRadar, and it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're ever using public Wi-Fi and you want to make sure that you're keeping people out of your data, ExpressVPN is how to do that. If you don't want to hand your online history over, again, ExpressVPN is how to keep it your own. Protect your online activity today and find out how to get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/TDO. That's expressvpn.com/TDO for 3 months free with a 1 year package. And our second topic today is, like Brian said, because he gave it away a little bit in the first half of the show, we're going to talk a little bit about Valley of the Boom, which is a new show on the National Geographic channel. Andrew, are you watching this yet?
No, but it's on my list. I saw the trailer and it looked pretty interesting. It's like a war between Netscape and Microsoft.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, young person, that's a real thing that happened. I kind of remember it. And Brian probably remembers it a lot better because he's a great big fan of the show. Right, Brian?
I am. By the way, I have a little theme song for the show.
Okay.
It's not their theme song. You want to hear it?
I do.
Valley of the Boom, 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 Valley of the Boom. I don't know why I have this. It could be sleep deprivation.
Well, so what I'm going to do is post a link in the show notes to tell people how they can make their own text tones so that once everybody else is hooked on this show, they can have that too.
Yes, excellent. Right. So I love the show. I love the show. I love the show. I love the show. It's looking at the 90s. It's season one deals with four companies. The season one is only six episodes long.
Okay.
And I think only four of them have been released.
I went and looked up their webpage, and their webpage only shows four episodes right now. So,
but I'm confused because it said the season finale will air next Sunday, or next week. So I'm not really sure what happens. Like, where's episode five in there? But whatever. It looks at four companies in the 90s in the dot-com boom, really, and it starts even before the dot-com boom was. The dot-com boom, and it's Netscape and Netscape versus Microsoft. It's Pixelon, and it's the Globe.
Okay.
TheGlobe.com. And it is this fantastic mix of dramatization and current interviews with some of the people that are being dramatized.
Okay.
Dramatized. Are you a dramatized or dramatized person?
You know, I don't really care.
So, just checking. This is things. These things are important sometimes.
Yes, they are.
But not in this particular case. And you've got fantastic authors, fantastic actors like Bradley Woodford. It's got a great cast, actually, just a really great cast. It's got a guy playing Mark Andreessen, who is at one point he's doing an interview. He's doing an interview in the style of the interviews with the other actual people. Mm-hmm. And he's speaking as Mark Andreessen, and you hear someone off camera going, you're not actually Mark Andreessen. And then, like, Mark Andreessen falls off his face, and he goes, oh, right. Yeah, sorry. So, like, Mark Andreessen would probably...
Oh, my gosh.
He would rather dine on goat's balls and glass than reminisce about the past. So I'm the actor who plays him, and it's just these fantastic sort of juxtapositions of things. Lots of breaking of the fourth wall. Lots of breaking of the fourth wall. Song and dance numbers in the middle of stuff. They'll do these freezes where the scene freezes except for the one person who's speaking, and he turns to the camera and speaks while all the people are frozen behind him, but they're actually just standing still. They're not using any CGI or green screening for that.
Oh, wow.
Which is like, I don't know, it's not like it's some amazing thing, but it does make like, it's a real, they talk, the filmmakers talked a lot about how they wanted the style of the show to be as disruptive as these companies were in their day. Mm-hmm. And it's fantastic. I am so enjoying the series. If you have any interest in tech in the 90s and the rise of the dot-com boom, mm-hmm. You should watch it.
Cool. Now, I do think that you missed out on one of the more important selling points, at least if you are Charlotte Henry. And what was that selling point?
Bradley Woodford.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, it's my selling point, too. I've got a total man crush on him. He's fine, but he's not the only great actor. There's lots of really, really good. I think the guy that does Andreessen is just great. You've got interviews with Jim Barksdale from Netscape, and then mm-hmm. some of the smaller players over at Microsoft, and talk about an illustration of everybody's the hero of their own story.
Yeah.
The battle between those two is interesting. Although I think the filmmakers cast Netscape as more the protagonist in that particular story. But Mark Cuban is being interviewed a lot. He has a lot of moments dealing with the Pixelon story in particular. And though he's not involved with the Pixelon story, but he was involved in early streaming stuff, so that's why.
Yeah,
it's right. Just fantastic. And the globe.com, Pixelon, and then Microsoft versus Netscape, with the focus being on the folks at Netscape.
Okay.
That's season one. It is super interesting. It is super, super duper interesting. There's so much good information. There's so much they'll show how the Netscape IPO was being treated in Wall Street. And Mary Meeker is featured in the dramatization aspect. She's not interviewed or anything like that. Mary Meeker was a playmaker in the world of Wall Street at that time. And, in my opinion, they do a fantastic job of really making it true to the 90s. How old are you, Andrew? 1997.
27.
Right. So you were like six at the time.
So Andrew has no idea what's happening. This is going to be like watching the Ten Commandments for him.
Yeah. When I learned about Netscape, it was like ancient history.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
And Mark Andreessen did the. And lo, Mark Andreessen brought the stone tablets of web browser code down from into Silicon Valley and said, "Yay!" No. So I'm actually sort of interested. I'm interested in this because I remember when this stuff happened at the time, but also at the time there wasn't a lot of coverage and there weren't a lot of avenues. Yeah, there weren't a lot of avenues to obsess over it. Yeah, like if you didn't read about something that happened 3 months ago in the new issue of Wired magazine, we'll explain magazines to you later, Andrew, then you didn't get, you didn't really have any idea what was happening. So I'm curious to see, I'm curious to hear about like the rest of the story and all of this, but I'm also curious how this plays to Andrew. So sorry, Andrew, but now you have homework. As somebody who wasn't really around for any of that. And to find out what
yet the repercussions and ripples from those four companies.
Oh, I'm sure.
Permeate throughout what Andrew does on a daily basis for us here at TMO.
Mm-hmm.
So it is an interesting thing. I mean, you know, TMO turned 20 on December 28th,
mm-hmm.
and we got our start in the lead up to the .com boom. And I remember these stories quite clearly. I remember I spent a lot of time covering the antitrust case against Microsoft.
Oh, with Internet Explorer. Yeah.
I covered a lot of the browser wars, LOL, the browser wars. And it, I mean, like, you know, it's super interesting. And I haven't, you know, like I tend to really hone in on anything that I think smacks of being incorrect. Mm-hmm. And at my level of knowledge, I haven't found anything in the show that struck me as being incorrect.
Wow.
And that's actually pretty remarkable because I'm kind of a jerk about those things.
I'll give you that.
Let me put that another way. Let me put that another way. I'm quite the snob. And as a snob, this receives my full endorsement.
That's good to know. That was the other reason I was interested in it, was because I knew that it was something that you knew a lot about, because I remembered you had mentioned before that you had covered it a lot, covered it pretty extensively, and so it seemed like something that if nothing else, you might have at least vague remembrances of. And I knew if it was wrong that we would hear about it. So I'm glad to know that it actually is not. That makes me feel a little bit better.
Yeah, nothing. I mean, mind you, they're showing us all kinds of things that I didn't know. A lot of behind the scenes stuff, you know, behind the scenes to those of us on the outside.
Right.
A lot of, you know, deep dives. What'd you call it in the meeting? Deep cuts.
Deep cuts.
Called,
yes.
Pixel on, decuts. Like, I had forgotten that Michael Fain existed, which ironically he did not. But I forgot that the person who called himself Michael Fain existed, but I now remember reading about Michael Fain back in the day.
Okay, so it sounds like an interesting show. I'm going to watch it. I told you I have it recorded. I just haven't actually had a chance to check it out yet. So I'm going to go take a little trip down memory lane and see what I think. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, that'll be next on my list.
What's on your list now?
I'm working through season 8 of Shameless.
Oh, okay. Approved.
Is that the new season?
Mm-hmm.
Got it. Is that show 8 years old? Or are they doing like a season every 4 months?
Well, see, I think it started way. I think it might be actually 8 years old, but it only came to Netflix maybe like a couple years ago.
Huh. Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this has been TV Shows with Brian and Andrew. So I'm sure we'll get more recommendations later. But in the meantime,
mostly Brian monologuing.
Well, you know. It was kind of fun. And, you know, Andrew doesn't remember. He thinks that, you know, like I said, the Ten Commandments and Netscape 2.0 are like the same long enough ago to Andrew. So Thank you very much, Andrew, for letting us mock your unbelievable lack of age. I appreciate it. Thank you for coming on today.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Now Andrew's not speaking to me. All right.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Fine.
Andrew doesn't care. He's getting alerts from Snapchat or something. So we'll never get him
browsing
back.
Reddit.
Okay, I do applaud your honesty. Thank you, Brian, for joining me today.
Oh, for sure. Thanks for having us, and rock on.
All right. I will talk to all of you later, and we'll be back tomorrow morning. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.